Russell Wilson is taking the Steelers offense to places it hasn't been since Ben Roethlisberger was here. I don't know where this goes. I tend to think it's going to get better, although so will the competition. However, Wilson hadn't played a real competitive snap of football in 10 months. I mean, he took a couple, you know, felt like ceremonial snaps in the preseason, but hadn't really played in 10 months. And it showed when he started out against the Jets. But that quickly turned around. And after the first four series of that game or so, he's cooking, right? I think I had the numbers yesterday. Something like 34 of 49. I'll get the numbers here, limits. I don't want to mislead anybody. But we've all watched, right, with our own two eyes here. He's been unbelievable. And the fact, and here's the point about this, is that coaches love to tell people how complicated football is and what we don't see as fans or media or whatever. Here's a very simple concept. If the other guys have to respect the fact that you can throw it over their heads, then they have to deploy resources to that effect. And that leaves less closer to the line of scrimmage, stopping run games and short passes. That's just common sense. And that's what's happening with Russell Wilson. Ben's later years, the past 3 years since then, 2 years, whatever it's been, nobody respected the idea that the Steelers could beat them over the top. And that just changes everything about the way that you play defense, really in the most simplistic form imaginable. It's not that complicated. You and I could go out limits and play, you know, a 4-on-4 football game, flag football or whatever. And if your guy, if I don't think that your guy can throw it over my head, I'm going to play pass coverage a different way. I'm going to move up and be able to cheat more. It's just very, very obvious. And a huge reason why the Steelers offense has been a historical franchise embarrassment for a number of years now. And that's changing with Russell Wilson. And that's very obvious. Since those first handful of series against the Jets, he's 34 of 49, 523 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and a passer rating of 124.8. And I would argue that the other night when he went 20 of 28, it could have been much better. Najee dropped a ball. Van Jefferson didn't stop when he should have in the end zone. That's a touchdown. George Pickens was a touchdown, not once, but twice. Once Broderick Jones with the face mask, when Wilson was already on the perimeter, would have made that play anyway. So you can't argue that, oh, that play wouldn't happen because the face mask kept the guy from getting Russell Wilson. If you look at that play carefully, it really had nothing to do with the outcome of the play. Then there was the George Pickens not able to get both feet down on another touchdown pass. Then there was a 50-50 ball down the sidelines to Scotty Miller that could have easily and maybe should have been caught. I mean, there's a lot. We could be talking about a guy who's 40 of 49 for 650 and a passer rating of 130 or 40, whatever. You get the point. The question is, where does it go from here? Everybody's got the tape now. Russell Wilson appears to be back. He appears capable of inflicting damage. And I don't really care. You know, some people I heard yesterday talking about the point total from that game the other day. Well, really, if you, you know, the punt return, really you only had 19 points of offense. Analyze the game a little bit deeper, I would say. And first, look at how quickly you're getting into the red zone. That's step number one. How efficiently and quickly and explosively can we move the ball up and down the field? I'll worry about the red zone later. This is a brave new world in and of itself to be moving the ball up and down the field at will, seemingly. And then, yeah, things got screwed up in the red zone because of some player malfunction. Okay. I'd rather have to correct player malfunction than having a elementary school scheme that the whole NFL is laughing at where you never score or even move the ball early in games. And that's what you were stuck with. Whereas the other night, for the first time that I can remember, the Steelers came out on their opening drive and had another team just completely on their heels. And that's the scripted thing. That's just, we're going to have about 8 different looks. We're going to hurry it up. We're going to be efficient and explosive and powerful. And we're going to put them on their heels right from the start. And that's what they did. The Giants had to call timeout in the middle of that opening drive. They did the same thing on the second drive. Yeah, they should have been up 14-0. Player malfunction. You know, that to me, I can live with that because I know there's more. I know there was more there. I'm not worried about the quarterback. I'm not worried about the scheme. Broderick Jones, I'm a little worried about, but that's beside the point for now. So the schedule stiffens. We all understand that. Big Ben on his podcast, Footballin', weighed in on that. Weighed in on what he thinks of this new offense with Russell Wilson and where it's going from here. Limits, are you there?
Yeah, you wanted Ben on Cooper Kupp or Russ? I don't.
If we have to switch to that, that's not a problem. Go ahead with Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, here's Ben talking
about
a
big issue to you.
Cooper Kupp.
I mean, it would be a dream come true, but I don't think there's any. I don't think it's realistic, to be honest, because you're not gonna. And I just talked about with DeAndre, you're not gonna bring a number one in to a nut to this situation, right? I don't think Cooper Kupp would want to come here. You look at, he's only played 3 games, but through 3 games, 23 catches, almost 200 yards, 2 touchdowns through 3 games. Right now, we've played 8, and he would be number 4 on our team in receiving, just, in less than half the games. So you put him in it just shows that, George Pickens got 35 receptions. He's only 12 behind in less, he doesn't want to come here and catch the ball 3 or 4 times a game. Be targeted 5, that's not what he wants to do. I think he would be huge because how you can move Cooper Kupp around. You could put him in the slot. You could put him outside. I think that's a dream come true, but I don't think Cooper would want to come here, and I don't think it's going to happen. I think your best chance to get a receiver here is to go find either an aging number one or a number one that's on a team that isn't any good that wants to get out and make a run, or you go get a really good number two that's ready to move, that isn't on a good team either, that wants to come be a great number two here.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think the Cooper Kupp thing is probably done anyway because the Rams are actually in it. But man, I don't know that I agree that in coming here, if it was just 4 catches a game, that there would be some sort of problem. Like what's wrong with that? That's A. And then B, the Steelers actually threw the ball more than they ran it for most of the game the other day. Was that even the case with the final numbers? We were well into the fourth quarter, and they had thrown it more than they ran it. And again, when we're projecting forward, I think we might see more of that. Even though Najee was having a great game, they were throwing it more than running it, Limits.
Yeah, they were. And, I mean, that was the success of just the balanced approach, balanced offense. And, I mean, the last time we've seen a play-action offense be able to work like this was Ben. And with Le'Veon and AB, we saw how well it works. Obviously, the personnel is not as good, but it still can be effective if schemed open. And Arthur Smith is scheming guys open previously than what we saw even a couple weeks ago with Justin Fields.
Ben's other take that I was referring to was about how the schedule is going to stiffen and, those will be the real tests. That's a well-taken point, Although I don't think that these two defenses are all that bad, honestly. I don't think they are. I don't think the Giants or Jets are horrible defenses. Certainly they're better than Cincinnati's. You're going to have them twice. Are they better than Cleveland's? I don't know. Are they better than the Ravens? I don't know. See, to me, the schedule is going to stiffen in a big way with the quarterbacks that you're facing. I think the post-bye schedule will be more relevant to the Steelers' defense than it is to the offense, and I'm quite frankly disappointed in the Steelers' defense. I said, I think 3 games in after that Chargers game, that this might be their best defense in a long, long time. In a long time. Since 2010, maybe, I thought. I didn't see a weakness in any of the 3, elements of their defense. Line, linebacker, secondary. some average players for sure, but I thought upgraded in a major way since last year, especially you look at inside linebacker. And that's what I was seeing. And if you're going to be in conversations with defenses like that, then you have to be, first of all, dominant against the run, like just crushing people, especially at home, I feel like. And they haven't been. You know, a Cowboys team that can't run came in here and ran. A Giants team that can't run came in here and ran. They pushed the Steelers around on their home field. The Steelers got lucky with the final point total in that game, in my opinion. So, point being, I think that the better teams on the schedule coming up, mostly that's about having better quarterbacks and offenses. What do you have next from Ben?
Ben was talking about how TJ Watt and James Harrison, every time there's a third down, Ben thinks that when it was Harrison and he was playing with him, or TJ, that one of those guys, especially Watt right now, are going to force a fumble and create a turnover on every single third down.
No.
It's one thing to get a sack and now it's fourth down, but TJ knows to search the ball. Like, TJ would rather swat the ball out of the quarterback's hands than, like, smash him into the ground. Like, he wants the turnover over the big, like, smashing sack. And sure enough, not only does he knock the ball out, but then he recovers it too. It's just what we've come to see and expect from TJ. It's every week. And I know people are like, oh, he hadn't had a sack or whatever. But literally, he can show up. It reminds me of James Harrison when James was doing his thing at the highest of levels. It's every single time I'd stay on the sideline and watch James Harrison and I'd watch TJ Watt. On third down, as an offensive person on the sideline, on third down, it's every play. It's like, okay, interception. Come on, we got turnover. When you watch James Harrison, you watch TJ Watt, on every third down, you're like, this might be a sack fumble. Like, that's a crazy thing to think, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. Every single time the quarterback drops back to pass on third down, I thought James Harrison is going to come around the blind side because he was on the quarterback's left or right. He's going to dip under that tackle, and he's going to come with that big arm behind, and he's going to just get the ball out. I really expected every third down. It's the same thing with TJ. And Alex, too. I mean, Alex is doing it, too. You know, shout out to two sacks. They even flip-flop sides on one play, dude. And Alex got a sack. TJ thanked Alex on the first sack. I think Alex flushed him right into TJ. Hey, yep. That's why they work together. Third down, we might get an interception, but we're more likely to get a TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith, but TJ Watt, sack, fumble, our ball.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable feeling.
Yeah, that was good. And it's TJ Watt. Did you see what our friend Illuminor said from the Island of Misfit Tackles Limits?
Oh, he thinks he held his own out there.
Said TJ didn't do a damn thing, you know, other than winning the game on a strip sack, fumble recovery. He's wrong. He's wrong. Watch how TJ go back. And I went back and looked at a bunch of pass rush snaps, how, especially when it was one-on-one, he was making things happen. He was as unblockable as he ever is. And if you look at Pro Football Focus, TJ Watt got an unbelievable grade in that game, and our friend Illuminor failed. He got like a 40. Like PFF, it actually is sort of on the same scale as a grading scale in school. And last I checked, Limits, a 40 isn't very good in his pass blocking. TJ Watt basically destroyed him. Basically destroyed him, especially in the second half, and especially when he wasn't getting any help. Pro Football Focus is right about that. Thoughts, feelings, emotions, anything?
Yeah, anytime that you challenge TJ Watt in this type of regard, I mean, come on, you really think that you, young guy, trying to be cocky on the New York Giants of all teams, are going to be able to make a significant play? Like, TJ Watt, again, won the game, strip sack, fumble, and helped force pressure for Beanie Bishop to grab an interception. I mean, he's just got to go back into his hole and just accept the fact that he did not play a good game at all. And some people, they just want their egos to be as high as possible, and it seems like this is what the tackle wants.
Yeah, I mean, that was... What is this guy talking about? I can't get your reads here, Limits, because I have no internet. So I'm just going to go ahead with the next guest, which is Greg Ciceri. And he is the author. He's coming up next. He's the author of a book about the origins of pro football. Jerome Bettis, I believe, wrote the foreword for this book, or it might have been Franco Harris a couple of years ago wrote the foreword for this book, but Bettis and others had great things to say about it. And I think you'll be surprised at where some of this occurred and how. And we're going to have the author on next.